Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. And from the United Faculty of Florida, representing over 20,000 faculty and graduate assistants at 13 universities and 14 colleges, working to encourage lawmakers to fund Florida's future through support of public education. Online at myuff.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
An issue that critics claim has been driving up homeowner insurance rates for years in Florida is under the legislative microscope, and without lawmakers' help, Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Patrona says there's little he can do.
What I can control is the man-made hurricanes and the man-made disasters that the Florida legislature has the ability and should fix.
Also tonight, lawmakers are considering a plan that would require a person to live in Florida if they want to gather signatures as part of a citizens' initiative.
You can't vote in an election in Florida. You shouldn't be able to influence our Constitution if you're not a resident of Florida.
We'll also sit in on a meeting during which the last election was essentially relitigated. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's day four in week four of the 2019 Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. Legislators want to close a loophole they say bad actors are exploiting, ultimately leading to insurance rates increasing across the state. A bill heading to the House floor would address the issue. Blaise Gainey reports lawmakers and the state's chief financial officer are now focused on stopping those so-called bad actors.
I can't control hurricanes, I can't control wildfires, I can't control Mother Nature, but I can control is the man-made hurricanes and the man-made disasters that the Florida legislature has the ability and should fix.
The man-made disasters Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Patrona speaks of are false insurance claims he says are a result of bad apples in the industry abusing the assignment of benefits process. Naples Republican Representative Bob Rommel explains.
Those that don't know what an AOB is, assignment of benefit, it is when a policyholder enters into a contract, usually with a contractor who then actually stands in their shoes and directly negotiates to the insurance company for repairs and payments.
He sponsors a bill that he hopes will stop what Patronus calls an exploitation.
In 2006, we had 400 assignment of benefit related lawsuits in the state of Florida. This year, we're going to break over 30,000 lawsuits. So this is a pure exploitation of what used to be an option for individuals to have resolution to their policies. It's become an outright stealing of somebody's claim.
The Florida Office of Insurance Regulation reports since 2013, the number of AOB lawsuits rose by 26%. When insurance companies are forced to pay more for each claim, they ultimately get that money back by raising insurance rates. Rommel thinks the increase in lawsuits is happening because the one-way attorney's fee provision that requires an insurance company to pay for a claimant's attorney fees if they lose the lawsuit.
That means an insurance company can offer $10,000 to a claimant, $10,000. They could file a lawsuit, $10,001 could be the settled amount by the court, and that insurance company would be forced to pay all those attorney fees, many times much more than the actual claim.
Rommel's bill targets the one-way attorney's fee provision in an effort to deter bad actors.
This bill will allow attorney fees to be granted based on the settlement. If the settlement is less than 25% of the disputed amount, the insurer collects the fees. If the disputed amount is between 25 and 50%, neither party collects the fees. If the disputed amount is over 50%, then the assignee collects the fees.
He says the hope is that everyone involved will negotiate in good faith. The AOB issue was formerly known to be solely a homeowner's insurance industry problem, but it spread to other insurance areas. CFO Petronas says he's dealt with it personally.
I was in Tampa last January. I'm at the Tampa Fairgrounds. I'm walking out to go to my car. I'm dressed in a suit. I have my seven-year-old son with me, and I have an individual stop me and ask me if I have a chip in my windshield.
Petronas says sometimes companies even offer people gift cards to use as a reward for accepting their business, making an incentive for an individual to do business with them.
Ultimately, when you exploit that exponentially, and it's been increased, you know, thousands of percent, you ultimately will drive up the cost of car insurance.
But AOB can be used for good. It gives a policyholder the protection and ability to hold their insurance company accountable if they need to. Romo understands that and wants to give individuals who opt into an AOB agreement a chance to opt out.
If a policyholder signs an AOB contract, allow them to rescind the policy if they realize that's not what they want to do. Currently, once you sign an AOB policy and you want to get out, the only way to get out of that is to file a lawsuit yourself.
The bill also does several other things to try and prevent bad actors from taking advantage of policyholders and insurance companies. Among them, contractors would have to itemize their work, and if a claim is water-related, the person must be certified in restoration. Contractors would also have to give 10 days notice to an insurance company before filing a lawsuit. The proposal is now headed to the full House. A similar bill in the Senate is in its last committee stop. I'm Blaze Ganey.
A panel of Florida lawmakers has passed a bill intended to make sure the people behind citizen initiatives to amend the state constitution are Florida citizens. But as Regan McCarthy reports, opponents say the measure infringes on free speech and democracy.
Tampa Republican Senator James Grant says he doesn't like the idea that another country may have influenced the outcome of the 2016 presidential election.
Equally troubling is the fact that those foreign entities have an open season on our Constitution should they choose to fund initiatives, gather petitions, and run a campaign that would put something into our Constitution.
Grant is pushing a bill that puts new rules in place and that he says will help safeguard against that.
Here's what we've said, members. In order to gather petitions, you must be a Florida resident. If you want to be engaged in the process of making law, if we're going to continue making law in the Constitution, you should at least be a Florida resident. You can't vote in an election in Florida. You shouldn't be able to influence our Constitution if you're not a resident of Florida.
The measure also requires petition gatherers to register with the Secretary of State before collecting signatures and stipulates that a person cannot be paid based on the number of signatures they've gathered. The bill makes changes voters would notice in the ballot box as well. The ballot language would have to list how much in-state versus out-of-state funding went toward the promotion of the proposal, and it would have to include an estimate for how much money the changes in the amendment would likely cost the state, Grant says.
This will remind voters that in a state with a constitutional obligation to have a balanced budget, that there is no such thing as a free lunch. And so when we put out before the voters that a question may be asked of, do you support X, yes or no, they ought to understand that X will cost tax dollars. So we're either going to need to raise taxes or we're going to need to take money from other places to maintain a balanced budget.
But opponents say the bill would infringe on free speech. Scott McCoy works with the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Because you have to register in order to speak, and gathering petitions is a form of speech.
McCoy says he also thinks requiring petition gatherers to register seems unreasonable.
If I ask my spouse to sign a petition, am I a petition gatherer? Do I have to register with the Department of State? If I do that with my Boy Scout troop, if I do that on behalf of my church.
During a committee hearing Thursday, lawmakers voted in favor of the bill with just seconds before the meeting's stated end time. Officials had extended the meeting once in an effort to give the issue more time for discussion, but some on the committee said the process as a whole felt rushed. So far, the legislation has not been scheduled for any more committee hearings, and there's no companion in the Senate. But legislative leaders say they expect to see that change. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Still to come on Capitol Report, the 2018 general election gets something of a replay during a pitched partisan battle in a Florida legislative committee today.
We are putting in place a structure where we can fix a lot of the problems that we've seen in the 2018 election.
And the program that stands up for Florida's neglected and abused kids during legal proceedings wrestles with how to connect better with low-income children of color.
Support for Capital Report is provided by The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
A committee bill in the Florida House looking to make sweeping changes to the state's election laws has cleared a key committee stop. Ryan Daly reports a number of them would modify the state's vote-by-mail procedure, which sparked a partisan debate about voter access.
The 2018 election, once again and unfortunately, placed Florida in the national spotlight. While most of our election officials and poll workers did an outstanding job following the law, others struggle to do so.
That's Representative Blaise Ingolia, who presented the bill in the Public Integrity and Ethics Committee Thursday. The measure would make changes, Ingolia says, would avoid future embarrassments to the state while increasing voter access. For starters, it would move the last day to request vote-by-mail ballots from 6 to 10 days out before the election.
Currently, that standard is 6 days to request and 4 days to mail out. And quite frankly, my opinion, that's just basically playing with fire.
The bill also prohibits supervisors of election from mailing out ballots less than 8 days prior to the elections, and it seeks to allow supervisors to mail domestic vote-by-mail ballots earlier than before, between 40 and 28 days out.
Instead of the current 35 to 28 days, therefore extending voting in the state by up to 5 extra days.
Ingolia's plan lets voters drop off vote-by-mail ballots at a secure box at every early voting location. And for voters who want to take a photo of their ballot to post on social media, which is currently illegal, the bill would decriminalize it. Democratic Representative Geraldine Thompson filed 18 amendments to the proposal, all of which were deemed unfriendly to the bill by Ingolia and ultimately struck down. Many of them were in response to gaffes that put Florida in national headlines for a cumbersome election.
We have a federal court that has already ruled that Florida's signature matching provision and requirement is burdensome and tends to disenfranchise individuals. And so what this amendment proposes is an alternative to relying strictly on the signature match and would allow the last 4 digits of a person's Social Security number to be used as an alternative.
I'm going to affectionately call this amendment the amendment that launched a million stolen identities.
Like many of the failed amendments Thompson filed, Ingolia has a sharp rebuttal to the idea. Committee Democrats took objection to what they saw as the former state GOP chair and other Republicans brushing off of Thompson's ideas. Democratic Representative Cindy Polo pressed Republicans on the issue.
One of the issues that I have with not necessarily the bill, but the way that we as a body have acted towards the amendments is that we talk a good game and say that we want to give access to voters and we want to do everything that was necessary, but we started off by just immediately labeling the amendments as unfriendly, even though there are many that I think we could agree upon.
Polo countered Ingolia's assertions that the bill looks to expand voter access.
Obviously, we have made it very clear that voter access is a partisan issue. And that saddens me.
Ingolia, meanwhile, stood his ground.
I totally reject the idea that we are limiting access. We are expanding access in this bill. That is undeniable, that we are expanding access. We're expanding access. We are putting in place a structure where we can fix a lot of the problems that we've seen in the 2018 election.
And he addressed Polo's accusation that voter access has become partisan by way of the measure.
Now, it is no surprise that I am the past chairman for the Republican Party of Florida for 4 years. You do not see a lot of the issues in this bill that a lot of our grassroots, our rank and file, some of our attorneys would like to see in this bill. And there's a reason for that, is because we're trying not to make this partisan.
Paul Lux heads the state's Association of Election Supervisors and is supervisor for Okaloosa County. He attended the committee meeting to support the bill.
This bill addresses 11 of the remaining 13 items that the supervisor of elections identified at our last association meeting as legislative priorities and things that we would like to see accomplished this year.
And in response to the debate about whether the measure expands or erodes voter access, Lux sided with Ingolia.
It certainly helps expand access to voting.
The measure passed with a 13-4 vote, with Representative Joy Goff-Marcil as the lone Democrat voting for the measure. When the bill was heard earlier this month, it passed unanimously with bipartisan support. I'm Ryan Daly.
Florida lawmakers approved a series of new laws last year cracking down on telemarketers. Those laws went into effect last summer and addressed everything from unwanted voicemails to allowing phone companies to preemptively block robocalls. And yet, Lynn Hatter reports, the bad calls keep coming.
I'm getting a robocall, too.
You got
okay?
a message now, yeah. right now?
It's literally a robocall.
That's a video clip of AT&T CEO Randall Stephenson getting a robocall in the middle of an interview with the Economic Club of Washington, D.C. No one, including the head of a major communications company, it appears, is safe. When former Governor Rick Scott signed three anti-telemarketing bills into law last year, then-Republican Senator Dana Young praised the move.
Telemarketers, take note. We are after you.
Today, Scott and Young are out of their respective offices, but telemarketing and scam calls seem to be as prevalent as ever.
We average roughly 20,000 complaints in the office each year, and those complaints, specifically those 20,000, are dedicated to what we consider to be unsolicited communications.
My name is Alan Parkinson. I am the Chief of Mediation Enforcement with the Division of Consumer Services.
Parkinson works at the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. He oversees the state's complaint clearinghouse. Those 20,000 complaints deal directly with scammers, telemarketers, and do not call list violations. Even though consumers sign up, scammers and telemarketers continue to find ways to get around the rules. The main way is a practice known as spoofing.
It's a way to hide who is actually trying to contact you and make it really hard, if not nearly impossible, for states and federal agencies to track them down.
The number may look familiar. It could even be a local area code. But when you answer, it may sound like this.
For more information on how to receive your medical brace, press 1 now, or press 9 to be placed on the Do Not Call list.
Your call is very important to us. Please stay on the line and you'll be transferred to the next available agent.
Hi, this is TJ with Chronic Pain Services. May I ask who I'm speaking with?
Hi, TJ. This is Lynn Hatter. I'm a reporter with WFSU Florida Public Radio. Are you a scam? Parkinson says help could be on the way.
The FCC has sent letters to all the telephone service providers demanding that they get in and start to do something to address that problem.
Earlier in the story, we mentioned Florida approved three laws last year targeting telemarketers and scams. One raises state fines, another bans direct voicemails, and the third ties into the FCC's demand that service providers pre-block the calls. But Parkinson says the results are lackluster so far.
They need to do that. That's what's going to help stop the actual illegal robocalls.
In letters to the FCC, companies like Sprint and AT&T say while they support the effort, it's going to take them a while to implement the technology. Meanwhile, other types of calls continue to be legal. Take, for example, political messages. Those types of texts and robocalls are perfectly okay, and it's legal for the information to be given out if it's requested.
Yeah, we had a lot of complaints about that. So absolutely, there were a lot of phone calls to cell phone numbers and text messages to those numbers also from campaigns and special interest groups and political action committees. Certainly through 2018, the election cycle.
Leon County Supervisor of Elections Mark Gurley says there are ways to stem those messages. Voters can ask to have their phone numbers and emails removed from their voter profiles. But Early says there's a trade-off. Election officials need that information, too, especially when it comes to reaching voters who may have problems with their ballots.
So we want to have that data. I understand why people might want to get their email and phone numbers taken off of the voter registration files, and that's certainly everybody's right. But what we're trying to do is get that data protected so that we can keep the information to make the communication channels very effective.
Early is hoping for changes in an elections bill that's moving through the legislature. Two other proposals would let consumers on the Do Not Call list who receive two or more phone calls within a year to sue the company or person responsible. Courts could award damages and fines up to $1,500 per violation. The measure was set for a hearing earlier this week, but was temporarily postponed. I'm Len Hatter.
Not all the action is taking place in Tallahassee this week. President Donald Trump is visiting Lake Okeechobee tomorrow. The trip to the troubled lake comes as top Republican leaders in the state say the president's proposed spending on Everglades restoration isn't enough. Lake Okeechobee is among the state's most significant natural resources. And as WMFE's environmental reporter Amy Green explains, there's debate after last year's toxic algae bloom over just how much water the lake should hold.
Paul Gray steps into ankle-deep water lapping the sandy beach on Lake Okeechobee's north shore. But he says the beach shouldn't be here. It should be grassy marsh.
We're walking in open water. There's a couple little teeny plants here. They're 3 inches tall. There should be plants everywhere here. And so this is what we're trying to regrow.
High water since Hurricane Irma in 2017 has wiped out the marshes of the state's largest lake.
Basically, we've lost about 60 square miles of plants in Lake Okeechobee just due to deep water.
Gray of Audubon, Florida, says the marshes sustain game fish and wading birds. They also filter the water of nutrients that feed harmful algae blooms.
We have to regrow them, and we've got to start from scratch, but they leave seeds behind. And so normally, we'd want to get down to 12 feet, but in order to get the sunlight to the areas where they grow down at the 9, 10, 11-foot contours. We got to get the lake all the way down to 11 feet.
High water also prompted massive discharges last year that helped trigger widespread toxic algae. Gray is among those calling for a lowered lake. Governor Ron DeSantis says he has contacted President Donald Trump about instructing the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to draw down the lake. Here is DeSantis in January in Naples.
They can manage it as low as, I think, 10.5 feet with no change to law or regulation. I think if they can get to 10.5 feet by middle of May, even through rainy season, you may not have to do discharges at all, or you certainly would do less discharges.
Lake Okeechobee spans half the size of Rhode Island and serves as the hydrologic heart of the Everglades, a watershed supporting the drinking water of more than a third of Floridians. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers manages the lake by releasing water through a series of canals to the coast. The federal agency has begun a 3-year effort to revise the rules regulating the discharges as part of a nearly $2 billion project to refurbish the lake's aging dike.
We're looking at it truly as starting to manage the system.
Lieutenant Colonel Jennifer Reynolds of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says the new rules also are needed as some Everglades restoration projects are nearing completion. The federal agency has said in the meantime, it will lower the lake, but not to any target. Reynolds says drawing down the lake now can help prevent discharges during the summer when toxic algae thrives.
And by allowing more light penetration to that vegetation in the lake, that helps give the lake an ability to heal itself.
Statewide, Floridians are dreading another toxic summer. But a lowered lake worries the region's farming communities that depend on the lake for recreation, tourism, and water supply. Hendry County Commissioner Carson Turner opposes drawing down the lake to 10.5 feet.
You're messing with Mother Nature. You mess around and catch a drought, and now you're getting to a situation where, short of a natural storm event, you're not going to be able to recover the lake.
Back at Lake Okeechobee, sparse patches of grass shoot up from the sandy beach. Paul Gray says the marsh should be thick and lush.
What you're seeing now is just a skeleton of what ought to be here.
He says it's a sign the lake is stressed.
When they're growing, the water's crystal clear because they take up the nutrients. You don't have any algae blooms because they're taking up the nutrients. And they really make great water quality, and just they're full of birds, they're full of life. Once you lose them, then you have dirty water.
But he says the marsh can come back, and so can the lake. Amy Green on Lake Okeechobee's North Shore.
You're listening to Capital Report from WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, the Florida Guardian Ad Litem program represents abused, abandoned, and neglected children in the state's dependency courts. but minority kids are disproportionately represented there. So the program is turning to Florida A&M University's School of Journalism and Graphic Communications for help in recruiting volunteers who are male, young, or members of minority groups. Last year, Guardian Ad Litem represented more than 39,000 children with about 13,000 volunteers, but the average volunteer tends to be older, female, and white, while children of color are disproportionately represented throughout the dependency system. Alan Abramowitz is executive director of the statewide Guardian Ad Litem program.
If you look at the child welfare system, from investigations of families to what happens next, whether they go to foster homes or reunified or adopted, the further and deeper you go into the child welfare of the system, the more the disproportionate problem occurs.
Minority children find foster and adoptive homes at lower rates, rack up more placements, and are likelier to be placed in a group home or to age out of foster care without a forever family. Calvin Martin is Guardian Ad Litem's Director of Advocacy and Inclusion. He says communities vary widely in responding to a call for volunteers, and many are mistrustful.
And sadly, sometimes that is, those are communities of colors due to some mistrust of the system itself as a whole. So we have to figure out a way to do specific types of engagement efforts, which is where I think where this partnership comes into play.
And yet Guardian Ad Litem is charged with representing the best interests of every child, Abramowitz says.
And so we wanted to take on the idea of implicit bias and take on these issues so we can make sure that every child is taken care of.
Michelle Ferrier, who became dean of FAMU's School of Journalism and Graphic Communications last year, was receptive. She says that comes from seeing the challenges that young people out of foster care face in getting a higher education.
And so I think our student population are of the age to understand not only the challenges that they face as students, but the additional challenges that these students who are emancipated youth that come out of this program face in housing, in getting the support that they need, in getting the food that they need to be able to eat every day.
But she also believes helping Guardian Ad Litem will hone her students' critical thinking skills.
We're giving our students the opportunity to take an obviously real-world problem and bringing to bear all of the skills of our students in our journalism, PR program, as well as in graphic communications to try and develop messages and reach into those populations that have been hard to reach.
Regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Thanks also to Amy Green at WMFE in Orlando. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Be sure to join us again every weeknight throughout the Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. And from the United Faculty of Florida, representing over 20,000 faculty, staff professionals, and graduate assistants at 13 universities and 14 colleges. Advocates for quality higher education for all Floridians. Online at myuff.org.